This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Futuro.
Dear listener, there are some four-letter words that are going to drop here, so be prepared.
We were just living life. We were very boheme. You know, because the Noeurican Poets movement is a post-beat movement. And unfortunately, you know, when you're in a movement, you usually don't know you're in a movement until it's moved. And you turn around and go, yeah, I was part of that, you know?
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a spoken history of the iconic Noeurican Poets Cafe. So let's set the scene. It's New York City. It's the 1970s. It's gritty. It's violent. It's very alive with Puerto Rican music and vibes, but there's also deep poverty and xenophobia. It's out of this urban chaos that a group of writers, Puerto Rican by birth, but mostly raised in New York City, seek out community, and they find it within each other and their words. They would call themselves the Noeurican Poets, and together, they would spark a literary revolution. In 1974, the play, Short Eyes, written by Noeurican writer Miguel Piñero, was the first production by a Latino to ever debut on Broadway. Eventually, it became a feature film. The epic poem, Puerto Rican Obituary, by Pedro Pietri, became known as an essential indictment of the so-called American dream.
They work, they work, they work and they die broke, they die owing, they die never knowing what the front entrance of the First National City Bank looks like.
And then there's one of the poet's most lasting contributions to the arts, the founding of the Noeurican Poets Cafe. It's been nearly 50 years since the cafe began as a literary salon in Miguel Algarín's apartment in Manhattan's Lower East Side. By around 1975, it was clear that Miguel's living room was just too small to serve as the cafe for much longer, so the Noeurican moved to a new location nearby, and then moved again to 236 East 3rd Street, where it stood for over 20 years now. Miguel, who I was lucky enough to know, was an incredibly gregarious man. He was a poet, an educator, and a central figure in Noeurican history. He died nearly 1 year ago in November of 2020. Today, the Noeurican Poets Cafe is a place for artists to perform at open mics and competitive poetry slams. It's a place to workshop and collaborate with fellow writers, and a place where they can stage their own theater productions. On this episode of Latino USA, we're going to pass the mic along to some of the poets and artists and activists who worked alongside Miguel Algarín to build the Noeurican Poets Cafe. First up, poet Jesús Papoleto Meléndez is going to share his memories of the Noeurican literary movement and what it was like to witness the origins of the Noeurican Poets Cafe.
Miguel Algarín, who was a professor at Rutgers at the time, you know, he was, I guess, like the most literate out of all of us. Well, he had an apartment on 6th Street. It was like on the ground floor in the front with, you know, really nice apartment. Anyway, we could go in and it ran all the way to the back. And we would hang out there for days sometimes. Like a poetry reading would begin on a Friday night and end on a Sunday morning. And, you know, we drank wine, smoked pot, and other things. And I remember we were into Almaden wine. That was a thing, Almaden. A Sauternes. I don't even know what a Sauternes is. And a Chablis. And that's what we were drinking and smoking. And we'd fall asleep, you know, and wake up and the reading is still going. You know, or you wake up the next day and you're the only one on the couch, you know. And what was cool about that was that the poets would say, okay, I just wrote a poem. And they reach in their pocket and pull out a piece of paper that's been folded like 8 times to fit in your pocket. And they had a brand new poem on it. They would recite these, you know, and people, And then the poet would finish reading and go sit down and start working on the poem some more. You know, you could see them making notes on what they just read. That was cool. and then when we woke up in the morning, you know, we had to go buy eggs and milk and make coffee and bread and shit like that. It was a fun time, you know. My name is Jesus Papoleto Melendez. Jesus Melendez, that's my family name. Pero Papoleto is a name my great-grandmother gave me. Ever since I was a little kid, I think I knew my name was Papoleto before I knew it was Jesus. Now, the interesting thing about the word Papoleto, which I like very much, it has the word poet in it. So after the P-A, you have P-O, there's an L, and then it's E-T. So, and then the remaining letters spell out the word Paulo. Anyway, I was born in 1950. I was conceived in Puerto Rico and born in New York City. I came to New York City in my mom's vientre in January of 1950 from Puerto Rico. And I was born in June. I like that because to me that makes me quintessential Puerto Rican. I was smuggled into the country. Actually, to be a New Yorker, your development as a person has to be affected by you coming to New York. You can't arrive in New York from Puerto Rico as an adult and call yourself a New Yorker, because it's the experience of living and struggling to live here at some formative portion of your life that affects you and impacts you and makes you who you then become. So you just can't grandfather yourself into that kind of reality. I began writing as a little kid. I think I began writing when I was around 7 or 8 years old, maybe earlier. When I was 19 and 17, 18, 19, I wasn't a literary person, so I wasn't reading Waltman or, you know, or anything like that. Well, I know other people were, and they were getting a more literary. I was getting more street education of writing. I was writing about what was around me and what I was thinking. But at the same time, I began to get politicized. You know, like there was a Vietnam War.
Thousands of demonstrators opposed to the Vietnam War assembled in the nation's capital for a mass protest.
I lost my leg in Vietnam, and I'm totally opposed to this war we're carrying on over there.
Kent State.
Today, when 1,500 students started an anti-war rally on the university commons, the guardsmen surrounded them. 2 young men and 2 young women were killed, and at least 12 other students were wounded.
Things you couldn't avoid, you know, if you were paying attention, like I do anyway. I started going down to the village because, you know, like somehow there's certain things get there. They call you. The village kind of calls you. It was that kind of thing. So we go to the village, and in Washington Square Park at that time, you know, there were like musicians playing guitars, you know, on the side, and there were poets reading, you know, blah, blah. So stuff like that. There was a political movement, you know, the socialists or movements of Puerto Rico freedom.
And unemployment is high, business is bad, and there is too much colonial-style poverty.
I want you to do readings, do rallies. You know, hey, could you read this poem? all these cats, you know, were down there. And that's where I met Lucky, Cienfuego, Bimbo Rivas, Miguel Operena, Miguel Agarín and Piñero, Pedro Pietri, whom we called El Reverendo Pedro Pietri, because, you know, he took a correspondent course to become a reverend. Okay. My friends at Brooklyn College asked me to do a poetry reading at Brooklyn College. They were going to pay me. And when the check came, I called Pedro up. And he told me to go meet him at his house. I went down to 125th Street to the projects. Pedro met me on the corner. And there was a check cashing place right there. Then there was a liquor store right next to the cash place. And Pedro said, you want to buy a bottle? So we walked into the liquor store and bought a bottle of Don Cu. And that's really the beginning of our hanging out. There was a strong sense of camaraderie. You know, people were really close to each other. It's like people that are mute, and they're finally speaking to other people who are deaf and can finally hear. You know what I mean? So there's that appreciation. When I was younger, you didn't even know what a poet looked like except Shakespeare. And we created a movement that helped you see what poets look like. Yeah, and what they sound like and what they do. We helped do that in America, in the United States. See, academia wasn't accepting us, wasn't gonna say you're a poet. Like right now, I tell people, yo, I don't have a degree. I'm 71 years old, I don't have a degree. But I know people who have degrees in poetry now, and they have jobs, and they get positions, and they get all of this, things that we never got. But they get that because of what we did. One time, we're hanging out in front of the New Eureka Poets Cafe after Pedro passed away. So this is around 2005, 2006. And we're drinking beer outside the cafe in those stupid red cups. Now, we put them in the stupid red cups because we didn't want to be outside drinking, you know, out of a bottle of beer. When these two stupid detectives come by, right? So they want ID. And at that point, you know, I didn't have any ID. I had a business card on me. So when the cop asked me my ID, I give him my business card. He says, no, ID. I said, well, that's my business card. What, you think I'm going to give somebody my business card with information that's false? How the hell are they going to get a hold of me? So he says, no, I can't believe this, you know, blah, blah. I said, well, look, go inside the cafe and ask the people in there, who the hell am I? And he says, what, that's a bar? I said, no, that's a cultural institution.
Coming up on Latino USA, for nearly 50 years, the New Eureka Poets Cafe has been a vital space for Black and Latino creators. And its next generation of artists have a rich legacy to learn from. Our oral histories of the New Eureka Poets Cafe continue. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And we've been hearing about the New Eurekan Poets Cafe and the movement behind it from some of the writers that helped build it. Coming up on the show, playwright Ishmael Reed and poet, visual artist, and archivist Lois Elaine Griffith. They're going to reflect on creating a space for Black and Latino artists that's uniquely our own. But first, spoken word poet Caridad de la Luz, the Bronx poet known as La Bruja, now takes the stage.
The New Eurekan Poets Cafe, it still has that connection to the 70s, 1973, when it was founded. It's like, it's the coolest little cafe. It's just like when you think of like beatnik era and, you know, it's smoky, even though there's no smoke allowed in there. It's just so strange. It's a mystical place. There's definitely spirits there. It's on the Lower East Side, Loisaida, Alphabet City, nestled between once was tenements, now has become high-rise luxury places. And it's just a simple stage, a microphone, black curtains, brick walls, and magic. And you can go in there, and even though it's called the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, which, you know, is rooted in Puerto Ricans in New York, making the New Eurekan culture, it is open to everyone. You can go to the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, sign your name, and get up on that microphone and share your authentic self, and you will have people hold space for you to speak your truth. And the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, that's really what it is. It's a mecca of truth-telling for the world.
Bing, 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 a New Yorico.
My name is Caridad de la Luz, and I am La Bruja. I am a poet, spoken word, Puerto Rican, New Eurekan activist, born in the Bronx.
The palm trees are tall like the skyscrapers. The entrance says welcome over the gate. And Margarita lost her shoe bailando salsa. She threw away the other to dance descalza.
I started my career at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe in 1996. I started performing on the open mics hosted by Babito, and it was the All That series. And from there, I was offered a monthly slot to perform at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. My best friend's brother, the Dubois family, Jerry Dubois, took me to the New Eurekan Poets Cafe because we were getting together on weekends. I was working at Bloomingdale's at the time, and we would get together on Friday nights and recite poetry to each other in bars. And he was like, there's this place, the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. So My childhood friends came with me, and we went, signed my name. The guy in charge of the signing is actually Edgardo Miranda, who is the creator of the Borinquena comic. Babito was hosting. There was music. Mums was on the roster. The Lemon Anderson, Suhair Hamad. They were rocking it during this time. So I was personally shaking. And, you know, you have these butterflies in your stomach until your name, you know, your name is called. You're the anticipation of being called and not messing up. The adrenaline was pumping. I had my notebook. I go up there. It was the only time I ever wore fake nails. It was that time I had fake nails on that time. There's a photo of it. Me holding my velvet green journal, fake nails, long hair, baggy pants, polo shirt. And I recited something first in Spanish, and it went into English. And that journal got ruined in a flood in my basement. So I don't even know exactly what I said, but I know that it had to do with family, Puerto Rican culture, pride. And I got a standing ovation that night. It was a lunar eclipse. It was April 3rd, 1996. I wrote my name on an open mic list to spit. And the rest was history. I never turned away from that stage, that mic, ever again. The birth of the New Eurekan poet La Bruja was there. And since then, not only have I brought my one-woman shows to the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, or done collectives and different performances, musicals, and because I started on the open mic, I've been hosting open mics for years, well over 15 years. And I still now host the open mic at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. I was the first online open mic in its history.
Now I hand it over to you. And who will it be up first? Someone that brings his guitar and his folkloric music, original compositions, and always makes...
I had the blessing of being taught and a mentee of Pedro Pietri el Reverendo, Sandra Maria Esteves, who is the surviving matriarch of that generation, of that founding generation of New Eurekan poetry, and Tato Laviera. I worked with him as well. They're my family, my poetic family. They were all mentors to me, and as well as Miguel Algarín. Miguel Algarín was a queen king, honey, okay? He didn't take any crap. You want to talk about truth-telling, like he had just a lightsaber for a tongue. He loved listening to poetry. He loved critiquing it. He loved everything poetry. And he loved us. He would sit at the bar at that first stool right there, closest to the stage, which is where I sit when I'm there. And I think of him, it's where he would post up his books to sell. And, you know, he was larger than life. He was a sacred clown. You know, he came up in the time, same thing with Miguel Piñero. Puerto Ricans during that time, especially LGBTQ, the machismo is real. It's like how you can be an oppressed being but have machismo. You know, it was like this amalgamation of conflict and exploration in manhood and Puerto Ricanness and Americanness. He was a trip. He also had HIV and he also did drugs and was a free spirit. And he was like a bohemian gypsy. I'm telling you, it's the energy there. It's the place of beginnings. It's a place where I have workshopped my work. Whenever I had something new, the place to go and share it was the New Eurekan. That's where you do it. That's where you work out the kinks and you feel it out. You know, and word of mouth is everything. You can buy as many followers as you want. You can do all of that, but word of mouth cannot be bought. And the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, that's what it has. Word of mouth. It has cred. That's just from the real work, from really doing it, from really being there, from really creating change in people's lives. New Eurekan has done that for me, and it continues to do so, and it always will. I was told that they won a grant, and they may demolish it and do a state-of-the-art New Eurekan Poets Cafe. So keep that in mind. Those walls are going to crumble at some point. And will it have the same energy? I'll make sure that it does.
We were called rabble. You know, Alexander Hamilton used the term for the masses called rabble. So we call ourselves a rabble theater, rabble director, rabble playwright, you know, rabble audiences. My name is Ishmael Reed. I teach at the California College of the Arts, where I'm a distinguished professor. And I've written a lot of books and songs, and I play jazz piano. I remember my first introduction to New Eurekan poets, dating back at least to 1965, when we joined Allen Ginsberg and Amiri Baraka at a poetry reading at Columbia University. But I think the explosion took place around early 60s, where the New Eurekan writers began to assert their work. And they were bilingual, and this may sound like a stereotype, but they seem to have more of a rhythm, a beat, which was lacking in English. I think that the, you might call it the Latin diaspora, maintained some of the cultures of Africa. The collaboration was getting on there, And so it was inevitable that we would be part of the New Eurekan Poets Cafe experience. We still are. I left for the West Coast in 1967, but we still maintain ties with the New Eurekan culture. Now, I don't know the circumstances under which I met Miguel, but I think it was probably through Rome Neal, the theater director at the New Eurekan. Miguel was a very cosmopolitan person. And he was very witty. He would say, for example, if Columbus hadn't discovered America, he couldn't go to French restaurants. I use that line in my play. I mean, he had a great sense of humor and keep you in stitches. He just was just a wise, like a funny guy. But I mean, he was a serious scholar. I mean, he knew Shakespeare backwards and forwards and trilingual and just a beautiful person. And he took a gamble on presenting some of my plays. I mean, they would not have been produced had it not been for Miguel. He would read the scripts and he would give the okay for the productions. He never said no. For example, we did an opera called Gethsemane Park, where we updated the park where Jesus was arrested. We made it into sort of like a homeless park. And that's played around, began at the Black Repertory Theater, the only other theater in the country that will do my plays. So it's a black theater and a New Eurekan theater that will do my plays. Sometimes people in the audience end up in our plays. It's amazing. It's that kind of communal situation. Like Laura Robards, who's Jason Robards' granddaughter, came to see our play and auditioned for the new play, The Slave Who Loved Caviar. And she's in the reading.
According to the New York Art Crowd, Basquiat's career was made when he began a collaboration with Andy Warhol. But that story has a counter story.
One of the high points was Mary Wilson of the Supremes, the Motown star. She was performing at the Carlyle, and she came to see Mother Hubbard, which was another play that attracted a lot of attention. She asked for a role, and she learned the songs and her role over the weekend and appeared in the play. And so sometimes, you know, people who are very well known will come to see our plays, and they like them. The most controversial play that we did was The Haunting of Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Mr. Lin, are you the man that wrote the play about Alexander Hamilton?
Yes. And who are you?
My name is Ben, Mr. Lin. I'm the slave who's returned to Miss Angelica Schuyler Church by Mr. Hamilton, sir.
We challenged the idea that Alexander Hamilton, Angelica, and all of them were ardent abolitionists. They weren't. They owned slaves. Although people say this is an attack on Miranda, personally, it wasn't. Matter of fact, the storyline is that Miranda's been misled by historians who have misled all of us, who've been lying to us all along, and who've been trying to cast villains into marble. So we all succumb to these myths, and so we have to unlearn all these things. I think the media is, I'm talking about Hollywood, television, newspapers, have yet to diversify. The problem is that they're the ones who define us. They're the ones who tell our stories. And everybody complains about it. Asian Americans, Latinos, you know, Native Americans, blacks. We just don't get a word in edgewise. And so we're interpreted. We're like some lost tribe that anthropologists have to interpret. When we're perfectly willing to speak for ourselves, George Bernard Shaw said that when you let other people tell your story, they will vulgarize and degrade you. And I think that's the history of our cultures in the United States. Other people tell our stories and they vulgarize and degrade us. If you go to the New Eurekan and other theaters, you know, off Broadway and others, you might get audiences that will have never seen a play. And so we're in that old tradition of writing theater for the masses of people. Through the New Eurekan, we have provided black and brown actors over the years with challenging roles, the kind of roles that are not available to them in the industries like Hollywood and television as they're constituted now, all for profits and promoting stereotypes. So I think that's the legacy of what we've done.
My name is Lois Elaine Griffith. I have my own practice in terms of writing and visual arts. I've been working with the New Eureka Poets Cafe for most of my life, since I was, 27 years old. I met Miguel a few weeks after he opened the cafe. A girlfriend of mine and I, we had gone to, it used to be a place on the Lower East Side on Bowery called the Tin Palace. And there was Miguel Agarin, Miguel Pinheiro, and Lucky Cienfuegos at the time were given readings as the New Eureka Poets. And that's how I met Miguel. And he said, well, you must come. And then we established our relationship. We were partners, and I think we trusted each other. I would say, Miguel, let's do this. Yeah, okay. Let's do that. Let's get some money and do that. Well, I'm not New Yorkan. I am Caribbean extraction, Barbados, Guyana, Haiti. And I came first to the cafe looking for community, because I think that's essential in understanding New Eureka Poets Cafe. The Lower East Side had not been gentrified as yet, was not what real estate entrepreneurs call the East Village. It was Alphabet City. It was the Lower East Side. Let's be real. It was a place where immigrants came to these shores and many established themselves. The cafe has never been a place where I thought I was going to earn a living or make myself a millionaire. It was always the love of the art and the love of the community that brought me to it. It was a kind of place where we had a book at the end of the bar. You sign your name in the book and you could have 3-4 minutes from the sidewalk to the stage to get up before our audience, say poem, rant.
I was there when Dre decided he wanted to be an archangel. Every age requires a new lens.
When the one you left me for leaves you next, I want you to tell me, are you broken yet?
Expose yourself, however, and believe me, people did. When we were on 6th Street, there was a piece Pedro wrote that we did called Jesus is Leaving. Pedro Pietri, prolific writer. We did so many pieces, and it was a story about Mary and Joseph. And I never forget how many times I saw the play. Mary was stuck in the wheelchair. And at the end of the play, Mary got out of the wheelchair and stripped off her clothes. And don't you know, the community outside got to know the play so well that they knew the time when Mary was going to jump out the wheelchair and take off her clothes, that they would all come at that time, like maybe about 9 o'clock, 9:15, to look at the window to see Mary jump out the chair naked. I want to say that term grassroots is so overused, but it's a kind of organic, let's say organic development. And that's really how it started. We got the building on East 3rd in 1980. We got that building from Ellen Stewart at the time, La Mama, who had her theater on East 4th Street. And she used 236 East 3rd as a place where musicians who would come into town, she would have them, let them stay there, you know, just crash. It was a crash house. Half of New York City didn't even want to be down there, didn't want to know about that part of the city. So we said, yeah, we take this. People have been asking me lately about, well, where are the women? Where are the women? Here I am, but Sandra Maria Esteves would come around. Actually, it was because of Sandy that Miguel wrote, I think it was probably his only play, a theater piece. He wrote The Murder of Pito. He wrote that in 75, I think. Sandy had a friend who was killed, like so many young men, women too, of color. So Sandy came to Miguel rapping on his window in the night that this happened and told him the whole story about what happened, this cop in a frenzy. I mean, how many times do we hear the story? And Miguel turned their exchange into a theater piece. And we did The Murder of Pito that summer after Sandy's friend was mysteriously died in police custody. We did a play once. I think it was called Blacks and Blues by the poet Reynaldo Povode. This was back in the early 90s, I guess. And Miguel had this staircase to nowhere that was built as part of the play. Because these four characters, I think there were four characters, met on the street and the stoop. And I remember one time, we did this play with this stairway to nowhere. And after the play, let's turn on the music and get loose. Dance. And I mean, the 90s, the 80s and 90s were a time when dancing was everything. At the core of what we did from the beginning was the drum. The drum, the rumba, the conga, the celebration of the music. And so, you know, after any kind of poetry or theater, we would have to, okay, turn out the music, we gonna dance now. And we had this staircase, and these people came in, I'm neighborhood kids, and they're running up. I don't know where they thought the staircase was leading, but I never forget this. They're running up the stairs and disappearing, and Miguel and I standing there. What? Do they not understand the drop-off behind that? Oh, that's a memory. It's not funny. It's really not funny, but it was funny. Theater after the theater. It's ironic how oftentimes things that are outside the mainstream become mainstream. How mainstream uses the outside to feed itself, to begin anew. But sometimes you gotta think, what do you mean by success? Especially if you've been, I don't want to say a street poet, but if you've been just knocking here and there and stumbled into the cafe, stumbled onto the stage, begin to get a name for yourself, what does that do to you? What does that do to the poet? Where do you go next? Perhaps this is the next stage, that we can become a center for study, because half of these young people who come to the cafe these days, Pedro who? Amiri who? And they're writing poems like them and don't know the name, don't know where their roots are. So let's have a place, a repository, where you can learn about yourself. Some of these young poets stand up and recite poems like Amiri Baraka did back in 1967, 1965. When he was writing The Dead Lecturer, when he was Leroy Jones. And they don't know that they're sounding just like him. It's not something they learn in school. And it's time that they learn this in school. That Sandra Maria Estevez be read. So many Puerto Rican princesses have arisen and don't know where they come from. They come from her. They need to know.
Lois started and runs the New Yorican Poets Cafe Founders Archive Project. It's a collection of testimonies and recorded material for the New Yorican's decades-long history. Lois has been recently organizing a digital anthology about Miguel Algarín. It'll be released in early 2022. Thank you. This episode was produced by Alejandra Salazar and edited by Marta Martinez. It was mixed by Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Ginny Montalvo, Reynaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Our associate engineers are Gabriela Baez and JJ Carubin. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Maria Esquinca. Our fellows are Elisa Baena, Monica Morales, and Andrew Viñales. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, I'll see you at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. Have a great one. Bye.
Latino USA is made possible in part by New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Memorial that we did in the hospital.
Actually, before we get into that, do you want to finish your sandwich
first? I'm going to finish this half, and then we'll talk about it.
From PRX.